This episode of Engineering the Future is brought to you by Cornerstone Law, the official legal partner of OSPI. OSPI members get 30 minutes of free legal advice with a lawyer. If you have a legal inquiry about your license, engineering practice, unpaid invoices, contracts, or any questions about construction and engineering law in general, please do not hesitate to contact Cornerstone Law. For more information, please visit Cornerstone Law's website at cornerstone.ca or call 416-591-2222.
This podcast is brought to you by OSPI, the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers, the advocacy body for professional engineers in the engineering community in Ontario.
Welcome to Engineering the Future, a podcast brought to you by the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers. I am your host, Jerome James. At the intersection of innovation and responsibility is tech stewardship. On today's episode, we uncover the strategies, challenges, and real-world examples of how engineers are taking on the role of stewards to ensure that technology benefits us all. From ethical considerations to sustainability, we'll explore how tech stewardship is shaping the future of engineering. And joining me at this intersection is Mark Abbott, professional engineer and director of the Engineering Change Lab at the Mars Discovery District in Toronto, the world's largest urban innovation hub. For the past 7 years, Mark has led initiatives that have brought together over 150 organizations and 300 plus influential leaders to advance tech stewardship within the engineering community. Mark, welcome to Engineering the Future.
Thanks, Jerome. It's my pleasure to be here.
So let's just dive right into it. Can you define tech stewardship and explain why it's essential to today's engineering technology landscape?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I'll start by zooming out a little bit. I would say that in recent years in particular, it's becoming increasingly clear both the promise of technology, but also the perils and the potential pitfalls of technology. And so you look at things like obviously all the conversation around AI and generative AI this year with the launch of ChatGPT. You look at the increasing conversation around climate change and all of the technological change associated with that. I'd argue there's actually a larger kind of awakening in society writ large around the nature of our relationship with technology and those promises and potential pitfalls. And so it's within that context that we're thinking about, the need to be more intentional about how we shape our relationship with technology as a society and right down to the individual level. Where that connects to engineering, obviously, is if you think in a broad sense of engineering as the process of creating technology, then that process is very important in terms of obviously the impacts that technology is having on society. And so, how do we actually, as the people, engineers, as the people who are trained in the engineering process, who have that ability to actually create and apply technology, what's our responsibility and our opportunity to help steward or shape that co-evolution of society with our technologies towards a world we want to see, as opposed to one of those dystopian futures we so often see when we go to the movies and watch, stories about the future?
Do you find that this concept of tech stewardship has been widely adopted? Are people aware that it's even a requirement or something that we should be thinking about in today's technological day and age?
I think it's sort of an awakening that's just starting to happen. What you see a lot of now is people focused on specific challenges associated with technology, like algorithmic bias or privacy in the digital space, or it could be around, pollution with nanoparticles, or there's a whole range of sort of kind of technological issues. I think the current state of things is we're seeing those things as sort of disconnected or discrete and separate, and trying to address them with policy change or sort of high level kind of top down approaches. All of those, it's critical to look at each of those issues and to put in place things like policy. I think what's been missing from the sort of that we're just awakening to is there's actually this underlying question of of our ability as a society to steward our relationship with technology writ large, all technology and this kind of like this intricate co-evolution that we have going on. And that comes down to a very personal level. Each of us as citizens, as consumers, is shaped by technology, but also has an ability to help in our own small way shape technology. And if we happen to be engineers or policymakers or, you know, what our various roles in society bring with it extra opportunity and responsibility. And that's where engineering as a profession, I think, because of our role in the creation of technology, have that that kind of very unique and extra responsibility and opportunity.
Okay, so we're going through this technological awakening, as you put it, where issues are arising. Some of these challenges are actually being addressed at the tech level, at the IT level in large corporations. What can you point to as some common challenges organizations are facing when they're trying to implement tech stewardship practices?
Yeah, and let me relate it to, you asked earlier, what is tech stewardship? So tech stewardship as a professional identity, as a mindset, and as behaviors. So it's really about, if we want to shape the sort of future we want to see, if we want to be intentional about that relationship we're creating with technology, it's about, ultimately, it comes down to that level of individual behavior, right? And like the mindsets that drive it. So that's tech stewardship is about getting those new mindsets and behaviors and identity out there. The three core commitments of tech stewardship. So your question about where the challenges are, I can relate that to the three core commitments of tech stewardship. So the three core commitments are to advance understanding about the nature of technology, to deliberate values so that we're taking a more sort of, we're understanding the value tensions and making more intentional decisions, and to actually all translate that all into practical behavior. So on the first commitment of advanced understanding, it's incredible how, despite all of our obsession with technology as a society, very few people have actually stopped to think critically about, wait a minute, what is technology? So you get these kind of narrow stereotypes and misconceptions where technology becomes a synonym for digital or new, as opposed to the broader way of thinking about technology that you would see sort of potentially in, say, a social science class that was studying the nature of technology in society. So you get this kind of crazy reality where if you ask a lot of engineers, oh, what about technology? They hear IT, they hear computers, they hear only AI. Whereas in a broad sense, technology is the means by which humans adapt our environments to meet our needs and wants. So that could be, yes, digital technologies, but also physical technologies, biological technologies like CRISPR, even social technologies. So the first barrier is if we don't even understand the nature of technology and what's going on, then, you're building on a shaky foundation. One of the things that comes out of that deeper understanding of technology is disabusing the notion that technology is neutral. Technology is not neutral. Our values shape and are shaped by the technologies we create. The creation process, the engineering process, is inevitably one of kind of navigating different kind of value-based decisions and tensions. So that brings us to the second core commitment of how do we understand that process of how our values are being embedded in the world we're creating, the physical, digital, biological, technologies that we're putting out in the world. How are values embedded in that? And how are those technologies in terms shaping us? Marshall McLuhan, the famous Canadian, is often credited with the quote, we shape our tools and then our tools shape us. Well, what are our tools if not technologies? So we shape our technologies and our technologies shape us. And so understanding, what are the dominant values of the engineering community? What are my dominant values? And how am I potentially unconsciously embedding those values in the technologies that I'm bringing into the world? And then, sort of almost potentially unintentionally foisting a dominant set of values on communities that might not share those values. And then the final commitment, obviously, is how do you actually take all of this into day-to-day practice? So I think right now you have a lot of guidelines and policies around specific technology challenges. But where the bottleneck is, okay, well, how do you translate that into the day-to-day work of engineers who are creating and applying technology?
We hope you're enjoying this episode so far. At OSPI, we're here for you, making sure government, media, and the public are listening to the voice of engineers. You can learn more at ospi.on.ca.
Exactly. That was going to be my next question. Like, I'm hearing this more expanded idea of technology, not just in the digital realm. All different types of engineers are going to be interacting with this, are responsible for this. How can we, what kind of mind frame should we be in? How can we contribute to more of an ethical administration or understanding in our own organizations moving forward with this newfound understanding?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, if you look at the current kind of system, like when I graduated engineering back in the 90s, and still today, we tend to learn sort of the technical work over here, and then like the professionalism and ethics stuff over here. And we don't learn how to integrate those two things very well, right? And then you graduate and there's no longer an ethics class or a professionalism class. So you just put your head down and do the technical work, right? Like that's such a common story. You know, in my first career as a consulting engineer, you know, things would bother me. I'd have questions, but no one ever stopped to talk about them. And when we did, we didn't have language and it was really hard. So we just kind of, you know, shut up and did the tech, you know, did the next project, did the next kind of design. And so a lot of it is just like actually learning to weave what we call a tech stewardship practice, which is essentially a socio-ethical reflective practice. Like while I'm doing my studies, while I'm doing my work, I'm going to pause consciously, you know, maybe once a month, maybe every couple of weeks. And I'm going to think about what are the questions or tensions that I'm feeling around my work? And I'm going to, you know, connect that practice with others. So like if I'm struggling to say like something's bothering me here and I'm not exactly sure what that is, there's people I can talk to and connect with and frameworks and tools that can help me understand what that tension is. And the essence of tech stewardship practice is noticing those tensions around us and finding both end, what we call both end opportunities within the tensions. Because let's say like, you know, take a few tech-related examples, like around cell phones, you know, I value my privacy. I also value convenience. The way that technology has been, you know, kind of created, the phone and all the apps on it have mostly been designed to get me to give up my privacy in the sake of convenience, right? So that's a tech-related tension. If I'm in a, you know, say I'm in a company that's developing apps or developing cell phones, there are decisions that are being made day to day around the design of that technology that are actually kind of, you know, that are then being, you know, sort of broadcast out in the world. When that technology starts being used, it's creating tensions in all the users, right, around privacy versus convenience. You know, we shouldn't accept these trade-offs. There are ways to get the best of both privacy and convenience if we demand it as consumers, if we find those opportunities as the engineers working in those companies that are creating those technologies.
Oh, okay there, but I guess that's another tension, right? Because there are individuals in that company that knows what they're doing, right? They know how addictive what's going on. They know the sociology aspect as well as the tech side of it. Is it up to us as consumers to make ourselves more aware of what is actually happening in an app that is gaining all of my attention after work, or, you know, what I'm contributing to in my little piece of a larger project, coding, for example? How do we make sure that literacy is up to date? Do more technically minded folks need to take more sociology classes, or? But you said it needs to go beyond school. Should there be a non-technical elective to keep your PEng going forward in this new world where technology is, you know, bridging different siloed industries and disciplines? Is it enough just to be technically proficient these days? I've said a lot of things.
Yeah, short answer is, in my opinion, it is definitely not enough to be just technically proficient. And let's zoom out for a second, because you were also asking about how can an individual make a difference, right? And tech stewardship, obviously, you know, is inspired by the concept of environmental stewardship of the 1960s, right? In the 60s was when society started to wake up to the nature of our relationship with nature, and the environmental movement unfolded. And we know when we think about the environmental movement, it's not just high-level policy, it's not just organizational decisions, it's not just individual behaviors, it's all of it happening kind of, you know, in a complex sort of change. Like, it's a large, big change. And so that's the way we see tech stewardship too, right? Is right now we're in a moment where society's starting to awaken to the nature of our relationship with our technologies. And so that broader awakening about the nature of the challenge needs to kind of perpetuate the engineering field, but basically society writ large. And we need to start looking for those opportunities at an individual level, in our jobs, at a top level policy level, and they have to happen kind of in concert. Again, the engineering profession as kind of a unique community within society that's actually charged with the, you know, the creation process of technology and the application process of technology, we are imparted with these skills through society. We get a chance to study engineering. We get a chance to become professional engineers. We're given this trust. The thing that I think that is becoming clear is right now we're graduating engineers who haven't rigorously been sort of challenged to understand the nature of what they're creating, like the deeper nature of technology. That's happening somewhere other on the other side of campus, right? Like in engineering programs, we're so focused on the technical knowledge of how to actually create and apply the technology. And that becomes such an over-focus that somewhere on the other side of campus, there's a different group of students who are being trained to think critically about the nature of technology and its relationship with society in philosophy of technology, critical media studies, science technology studies. That group of students almost never mingles with engineers. And when they do, not only are we speaking a different language, we have a different culture. Like, I went into engineering because I want to get stuff done and you philosophers just want to talk. So we have everything we need as a society, but it's siloed. You know, we have the engineers, you know, just coming off and kind of just put your head down like I did in my first career, put your head down and just build the next thing, do the next project. And then you have years later, the social scientists come along and study all of the things that went wrong and do this sort of study after the fact. With tech stewardship, we need this connected practice where people with all these different, that have all these different perspectives and views and values to come together and practice collectively so we can build this muscle of this societal muscle of stewardship to ensure we don't wind up in one of, you know, living in a Black Mirror episode or, you know, a Terminator, you know, Matrix kind of future. In fact, it's funny how most of our stories of the future are directly or indirectly cautionary tales of us kind of getting our relationship with technology wrong. And yet as a society, we continue to invest so much in our ability to create technology, K-12 STEM programs to get more engineers, innovation to churn out more technology. You know, maybe all of that investment, if we don't pair it with an increased investment in stewardship capacity, maybe all we're doing is accelerating our arrival in one of these dystopian tech futures.
That's a frightening thought. So philosophy, the philosophy of tech stewardship 101, you have your graduating engineering class and philosophy students commingling, talking about the future of tech. Why does that class exist yet?
I think, again, you know, the barrier of a misappreciation of the bigger challenge that's going on. Again, we're talking about, you know, we tend to be talking about these specific, you know, biased algorithms on social media or, you know.
Yeah, actually, can you give us a solid example of something that has arisen in society that has totally upended our original thoughts of that technology, and does that story end well? Do we have an example of spotting an issue, good tech stewardship coming into play, and then solving that problem?
And there's examples at different levels. Like, you know, the environmental movement that we talked about before, their awakening in the 1960s, is a story that's still unfolding, but it's a socio-technological story, right? Like it's the decisions of how we generate and transmit power and the technologies associated with it that are central to that. So that's kind of a story that's still unfolding. But if you want to talk about successes and failures more recently, I would say the early advent of the internet, when you hear the story of how the internet was created, you know, the pioneers of the internet, I think, had an appreciation of the potential power of this technology. And there was decisions that were made early on that I think put a positive spin on how the internet unfolded. you see some of that eroding now and potentially being kind of co-opted over time. So there's an example, I think, of something that was a little more forward-looking and proactive with the internet. You could look at something like social media, where, you know, it got out in the world and really grew a long ways. And it's only been in the last few years that the general public started to realize the challenges and the problems with the social media, you know, the attention economy and some of the, you know, how people are being turned into the product, you know. And so there's a mixture of these kind of top level examples, but you can also translate it down into day-to-day examples of, you know, again, people working in their day job, feeling attention and either ignoring it or saying, wait a minute, what is this? And is there another path forward, and kind of, you know, charting kind of a new path. And so the examples exist, you know, at these large kind of movement levels, they exist at sort of organizational levels, and they exist at personal levels, and they need to exist at all those levels. And we need to make progress at all those levels.
This is the end of part one of our conversation with Mark Abbott. Tune in next time for part two, where we'll talk about the role tech stewardship plays in aerospace, healthcare, and manufacturing. We'll also discuss what government can do to encourage and support the responsible use of technology. Until then, I'm your host, Jerome James. You've been listening to Engineering the Future, and we'll see you next time.
From all of us at OSPE, the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers, thanks for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.